Hi, this is Dominic Pace, who plays Gecko the Bounty Hunter from The Mandalorian, and you are listening to Star Wars Comics in Canon.
Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Comics in Canon, your guide to the wider Star Wars canon through the comic book lens. And to take you on this journey, I'm your host, Mike Burton. And so brings episode 55. So then guys, this week I am tackling the Dr. Aphra comics number 26 to 31, and I'm going to touch on the second annual as well. This collection is called Worst Among Equals. And just for clarity, you can check out episodes 51, 46 and 42 of Star Wars Comics in Canon for the previous editions of the Dr. Aphra comics, and also on my YouTube channel, Genuine Chits Chat, where I upload my other podcast information as well as episodes for this show. I've put it into a playlist as well. So I've got the Dr. Aphra playlist, I think there's a Darth Vader playlist, the main run of Star Wars playlist, book reviews, and then guests relating to Star Wars stuff. I think they're the playlists I've made so far. I am planning on eventually making more. I'm doing the Age of Resistance Heroes stuff next week, so I think I'm going to do an Age of playlist as well, bits and pieces. So obviously you can check on the feed of Comics in Motion, which is where the majority of you listen, and obviously I release a new episode every Saturday, so you can just go back Saturday by Saturday to eventually find it, or just go on YouTube and then they're all in playlists there, however you want to listen. So a little bit of information about this comic. So the writer is Simon Spurrier, the artist is Emilio Lazo, and the colour artist is Rachel Rosenberg. Now it's worth mentioning that issue 31, which is the last issue of this arc, the artist for that, as well as Emilio Lazo, is Andrea Brocardo. Issue 26 of this comic was released in November 2018, issue 31 was released in April 2019, and the trade paperback collection, called Worse Among Equals, was released in June 2019. Now for clarity, on social media, I will have either by the time of this episode's release or the day after, I will have uploaded photos of the covers of these comics as well as a few photos from inside, and on my Patreon right now, they're already up. So as I always say, and I won't go on about it, but I have a Patreon, patreon.com/genuinechitchat. If you go on there and you support the show, then you can see some of these photos that released early. Got my Afterthoughts show, early access to Genuine Chit Chat. So if you fancy that, you know, check it out. There's also two episodes for free up there right now. So if you go there, you can listen to me and Megan talk about our views on Star Wars The Phantom Menace for about 25 minutes, as well as our Witcher Series 1 episode. So go check that out. The link is in the description. So let's do what I always do then. Let's read the crawl of this arc, and then I'm going to get on to the narrative, the connections, and the usual sort of jazz I do on these episodes. So here we go. Rogue archaeologist Dr. Aphra is on the run after narrowly escaping Imperial custody and the wrath of Darth Vader. But a new enemy has revealed itself in the form of Aphra's former fellow inmate, Lopser, who is actually the psychotic Dr. Cornelius Evazan. Evazan's latest scheme has trapped Aphra and her worst nemesis, the psychotic droid crime lord 000, into an explosive confrontation. So a couple of quick things here, just in case anyone listening has not listened to any of the other Aphra episodes and doesn't intend to. 000, he's a psychotic protocol droid, so imagine C-3PO, but instead of the desire for etiquette and calm, he likes chaos and he has bloodlust. So he likes to murder people and drain their blood and whatnot. All the crime lord stuff, that is information that is explained in previous episodes, so I'm not going to delve into that now. Now, for Dr. Cornelius Evazan, I have actually given him quite a big biography in, I think it was the last episode of Star Wars Comics in Canon to feature Dr. Aphra, so I think that was episode 51. If you go back to that, I give a brief, but essentially, the best way I explain it to people is, in A New Hope, when Luke is in the cantina, and you've got that guy with a weird face who goes up to Luke and says, "He doesn't like you," and, you know, Luke is like, "Whatever." And he's like, "I don't like you either." That guy. That's Dr. Cornelius Evazan. He's with his friend there, which is an Aqualish, which is the species, and the guy who gets his arm sliced off by Obi-Wan, that is Ponda Baba. So he's also known as Walrus Man, and I think that Cornelius Evazan's name in sort of before they gave proper names was also Rufo, or R-O-O-F-O-O. So yeah, Rufo and Walrus Man slash the guy yelling at Luke and the guy who gets his arm sliced off. That is Dr. Cornelius Evazan and Ponda Baba. Evazan seems to be a human, but he's basically done experiments on himself loads, which is why his face looks all weird. beard, and Ponda Baba is an Aqualish, which is their species. So they're quite heavily in this one, and it's been kind of a build-up to that, because in the previous episodes of Aphra, he's been mentioned, and then obviously in the last issue, it was revealed that he was actually Lopset. So, you know, a lot of build-up to this character, and he was also, fun fact, in Rogue One. You get to see him and Jyn Erso kind of bumps arms with him, and he kind of turns and scowls at her and stuff. And that little moment vaguely gets referenced in this as well, because it says that when they decranialated Tam Posler's partner, that was actually on Jeddah. So a lot of little back information about that. So let's get on to it. The first comic is issue number 26. I did say at the start, annual number 2. I'll probably tackle that just after this one. I'm not going to go into a huge amount of detail. I'm just going to give you some vague plot points. But issue number 26 is what we're starting with, which is the first part of this arc. And it starts with Evazan and Ponda Baba are watching Aphra and Triple Zero on a planet called Milvane. Now, the reason they're doing that, it does get explained in the previous, but essentially they've got bombs in their necks. If they get more than, I think it's 20 meters away from each other, they will both explode. And Evazan is doing this basically for fun. He's doing it because he just wants to kind of watch Aphra and Triple Zero, who are two very, well, morally bankrupt in different ways. Like, Triple Zero is an actual psychopath. Well, would be a psychopath if it wasn't a droid, but he has no morals or anything, and he just doesn't get that. Whereas Aphra is more sort of morally grey, where she's kind of in it for herself. So that's basically them. And so Evazan and Ponda Baba are watching it through Triple Zero's eyes, so that's how they can view everything. So Milvane is this place where it's very, very lawful. I actually get the impression of, if I'm sure a lot of you guys listening have read 2000 AD or Judge Dredd comics, or at least watch the Judge Dredd movie of Sylvester Stallone, or watch the Dredd movie in 2012 of Carl Urban, any of those things, if you know who Judge Dredd is, and what Mega City is, or Mega City 1, if you know the kind of realm that Judge Dredd is in, this actually reminds me quite a lot of that. The sort of, you know, you do a small crime, you get punished to the full extent of the law, but things seem on the surface to be better, but maybe they're not. That's how I kind of view this. You know, if any of you guys are listening who are massive Judge Dredd or 2000 AD fans have read this batch of comics, I would really like to hear your opinions on it, because it's quite interesting. But Milvane isn't really anywhere else in the canon. It's in Aphra, it's in a book, and then in Legends, it's in a source book as well. So it was a name that was basically mentioned in passing in Legends, and they've used it here, and now it's fully in the canon. So as I said, it's all very law-abiding and things, and Aphra and Triple Zero try and get past just like the first hurdle in this multifaceted planet and city, and they try and get through this basically checkpoint. They don't have identification, and they are criminals, and so Triple Zero tries to, well, succeeds in killing the cop by electrocuting him so much he essentially pops, which is quite intense after Aphra begging him not to do it. And so then the police are on pursuit pretty immediately on Aphra and Zero. While this is happening, once again, I want to clarify, I am scathing over the details. There is so much visually in these comics. There's a lot going on, a lot of them. I am going to be kind of skipping over certain details because, as I always say to you guys, I'm explaining the plot, I'm giving connections to other stuff, and this is made so that you can listen to this and still enjoy the comics that you're reading, but I can't give every single piece of detail, and there is a lot of detail in these comics that I really recommend. This is where, you know, the Aphra comics were already really cool, and they really pick up in these sort of issues, in my opinion. So it cuts to Tam Posler getting covered in those fungus spores. Now, that is from the previous arc. Tam Posler, he's a mercenary who's got it in for Dr. Aphra and Cornelius Evazan. He got killed, and these force-sensitive spores, we thought they got squished by Darth Vader and destroyed. They were, I don't know, incapacitated, if spores can get that way. But whatever, you see this floating corpse of Tam Posler around a Kreska jail, and the fungus consumes him, and then nothing else is said about that for a while. It does this while you've got Evazan as giving this vague narrative, because he's basically speaking to Ponda Baba while they're watching this feed of Aphra and Triple Zero. It's a really, really cool part, and I'm not going to read it out because I just think you guys would really enjoy it, but it's a lot of fun of the reasoning he gives, and he gives all this complex reasoning, and then at the end he goes, oh, so it's fun to watch. So I quite like that. And he explained to Ponda why they chose Milvane, and it's basically, you know, Aphra and Triple Zero criminals, putting them on a planet that is so inherently lawful is just fun to watch, so that is why they're doing that. After Triple Zero kills the police officer, after Aphra tries and fails to bribe them, Aphra says to him, well, why did you do that? And Zero is like, well, why would I not do that? You know, by your way, we have less money and I don't get to murder someone. That line of dialogue is just a perfect encapsulation of Triple Zero, and I love it. He is one of my favourite characters. So they try and it's called hot wiring a vehicle, you know, as we know it, you know, steal a car and things. They basically tried to do that in the Star Wars universe, and the vehicle starts flashing lights and the alarm's going off saying they need a valid identification to drive that vehicle. Avra and Zero curse the planet for being so lawful and then are trying to work out how to get out of the situation while there are cops slowly surrounding them. Triple Zero self-destructs the ship that they came in on, which causes a fiery rain of shrapnel and things and calamity around. The police prioritize saving the innocents from the explosion that just happened with all the bits of ship falling down, which allows Afra and Triple Zero to kind of slip away. They manage to hide, and Afra is scouring the Holonet and the Imperial newsfeed. Holonet is basically just the internet. And she can't find mention of Tolvin, who is the love interest who's been kind of on and off over the last little while. And in the last arc, to remind you guys, Tolvin had her mind wiped by the Borg, which is the weird giant octopus-like thing that can manipulate people's brains and incept their brains and put false memories in there. And Afra used Borg to make Tolvin think that she murdered Afra in a passion killing. So when Darth Vader interrogated Tolvin, Darth Vader believed that from Tolvin, because if Darth Vader thought for a moment that Afra was still alive, he would have killed Tolvin and then pursued Afra. But because of a lot of events that happened in the last comic, Tolvin managed to escape and Vader crossed off Afra off a list, essentially putting her as deceased still. So I gave that information because Afra is looking up Tolvin and can't find anything about her. Afra then mentions that Zero seems a little bit touchy when it comes to mentioning BT-1, and he says specifically, well, no, I don't care about BT-1, it's just that BT had my encrypted memories that you encrypted. So in the last one, Afra got hold of Triple Zero's memories, and instead of just letting him have it, she encrypted them as a sort of insurance thing, and then BT-1 got destroyed back under Kreska jail, which obviously Triple Zero is not happy about. Triple Zero then looks in a reflective window and speaks directly to Evazan, saying that he knows someone is watching and that he is specifically going to find them and give them a slow death, which is a lot of fun, and it makes Evazan and Ponda Baba kind of look at each other a little bit sheepishly there. Then Triple Zero and Afra pursue and find this guy called Rajum Nuss, and he says that he'll be able to take the bombs out of them. So he sedates them, and just before it fades out, Zero says that when the bomb's gone, he's going to kill Afra, and Afra was trying to convince him otherwise as they were both kind of fading out, and Triple Zero was having none of it, aside from giving Afra a 5-minute head start. They then awaken, and Afra bails almost immediately, and Triple Zero says he's going to stay with the doctor, and Afra's like, well, can you not? Zero says, well, you've got your 5 minutes, this is what I'm going to spend the 5 minutes doing, you can either bail or you can stay and waste your time. So Afra leaves, and then just before leaving the building that they're in, she checks some of the scans of what the doctor was getting up to while they were under, and this doctor guy, as I said, is called Rajum Nuss, doesn't appear anywhere else. Afra scans things and it confirms that the bombs had not been removed. Instead, a countdown was triggered, a 10-hour long countdown. As she realizes this, she runs back into the room to where Triple Zero is, and Triple Zero is standing over the mutilated corpse of Rajum Nuss and just says, oops. And that is where the first comic ends. So now I would start the next comic, number 27, but I'm going to quickly mention the annual. So this is Dr. Afra's annual number 2. If you buy the trade paperback collection of Worst Among Equals, the annual will be included in that. I am a special boy and I've got the issues individual. So when you see the photo of that on social media, you get to see the individual issues. How lucky are you? So I'm going to go into annual number 2 just briefly. It gives background to these two characters, Winloss and Nock. Now, Nock is a Trandoshan female, and she is the wife of Winloss, who is a human male. Now, that is not generally a very common pairing in the Star Wars universe. I've not seen it before, and the way they interact with each other gives the impression that it is not a very common thing. And just for clarity, Trandoshan is the same species as Bosk. They're basically lizard people. A lot of the time, Trandoshans are quite morally bankrupt. They're generally quite bad as a species. Not to say all of them are bad, because in the High Republic at the moment, there's a Jedi Master called Skeer, who is a very important individual and is a very good person. So it's not that every Trandoshan is inherently evil or bad, it's just the way their culture is and the way they view a lot of things, it's slightly different. They worship a god called the Scorekeeper and all this other stuff. I have detailed it in a prior episode. I think I detailed it in the Age of Rebellion Heroes comics, I think, because Leia has an interaction with Bosk when she's pretending to be Boosh, which is the helmet she wears in Return of the Jedi when she's posing to be a bounty hunter when she infiltrates Jabba's palace. She has a little adventure while pretending to be Bosk. She has to go rescue Lando, and she has an interaction with Bosk. And I think when I did that, I gave information about the scorekeeper and things. So if you want to know about that, go check out that other episode, because it's speaking about Trandoshan culture is not just an easy thing I could just pop on in here. But generally speaking, as I said, Trandoshans are not good, but this one seems to be. So the annual number 2, it's quite a cool comic and it's quite a fun read. I'm not going to go into all the details, but in essence, they have a job. They go to a rendezvous point. It turns out it's Aphra on the comms, and she helps get them through this temple where there's booby traps everywhere, and she keeps saying she's referring to sacred texts. And then as it gets further and further, she's like, oh, watch out for that, watch out for that. And there's loads of dead bodies and things everywhere. And it seems to become apparent that what's actually happened is Aphra doesn't have any texts. It is just that she sent loads of other people in there and they keep getting killed. So she knows by trial and error where all the temple traps are. They then fight this beast. There's mention of like a moral code where neither Winloss nor Nock like to actually kill beasts. They like to trap them and give them to people. They don't really like killing people either. It basically ends with Aphra betraying them and trying to steal the artifact that is in that temple. I'm not going to delve into it any further than that. That's really all you need to know, because it is actually a really fun annual. It's one of the better annuals. A lot of the annuals actually are quite weak sometimes. So I'd say if you are a fan of Aphra, check that out. If you do have Marvel Unlimited, the annuals are under Dr. Aphra Annual as a series, as opposed to being amidst the standard Dr. Aphra issues. I feel like it would be a lot easier if they just included it in that, but, you know, I'm not in charge of Marvel or Disney or anything like that. So yeah, you can find it on Marvel Unlimited. It's worth a read, and I'd say it's probably worth reading either before you tackle this whole arc or after issue 26. And yeah, it just gives backstory on Winloss and Nock and how they know Aphra beforehand. So moving on to issue number 2, which is, well, issue number 27, the second part of this, it starts with Winloss and Nock, unsurprisingly. They approach what seems to be Princess Leia, and she gives them an order to retrieve 000 for them for money, or to rather, to kill 000 for money. They basically say no, and then they see that actually Dr. Aphra is involved, and they go, oh, actually, no, we'll make you a deal. We'll kill Aphra, and we'll bring you 000 alive, if that's okay. And they're like, yeah, sure, go ahead, we can do that. Then they leave, and it shows that it's actually Dr. Cornelius Evazan who is posing as Leia, because he basically is just doing it because it makes the game more fun. This weird, he calls it an experiment that he's doing on Aphra and 000, but he's just watching it for fun. And the reason you know it's him is he uses that weird pluriplec, is what it's called, which is like a squid thing you put on your face and then it changes your appearance. So while that is going on, Aphra finds a guy called Professor Prexo who may be able to remove the bombs. He seems to be a specialist in the city, and obviously 000 has already killed the other guy who may have been able to help, and now they have a 10-hour countdown. It turns out Prexo is on the other side of the city. It's going to take quite a while to get there. So Aphra and 000 head to a train, and they try and not murder anyone. That's what Aphra asks 000 to do. It's like, can we just try and travel across without murdering people all the way across? Gets up to the train conductor person, or the driver of the train at the front. It's a woman, and they ask to get on. She says about IDs. They're like, look, can we just get on without IDs and bribe her? She says that's fine, and then she says about putting the droid, or 000, into the sort of back area where all the other droids are. 000 doesn't like that very much. He starts to get quite aggressive, and as Aphra's trying to calm him down, the conductor or driver of the train then calls something called Snitch Line, which I love the name of that. Then these droids come down, or they kind of look like drones a little bit. They come down, pick up 000, and basically just throw him off a roof, which is quite funny, into sort of the underworld area in a sense. This woman thanks Aphra. She's like, thanks for letting me do that Snitch Line thing. You know, I've just made an extra 100 credits. And then Aphra says, oh, can I have my money back then if I don't get on the train? The conductor says no. So Aphra grabs the gun that the conductor has. Why someone driving a train needs a gun, I'm not overly sure, but still. She takes the gun off her and then follows 000 by diving off the side of a building. Aphra falls into a net, which is the net that caught 000 seemingly. Then 000 is being eaten by something called Girtle. Now, Girtle seems to be something called a Quaberworm, Quaberworm. They're very protective of their owners, and they can't feel pain. I can't find them anywhere else in the canon, so it's seemingly only in Aphra. They're quite a cool-looking being. So it's quite hard to describe this thing. Just imagine a really, really big ball with tentacles. The ball itself is the mouth. It's got like 3 glowing red eyes on either side, and it is massive. It could probably swallow a car whole. That's the kind of size of it. It's grey, massive mouth, could, yeah, swallow a person whole easy, and massive tentacles and things. So there's this thing down there, and its name is Gertl. Now, it can't speak, to our knowledge, but it does have someone, which is a little scrap girl. She is basically the owner of Gertl, or Gertl is her pet, and as I said, quaborworms are very protective of their owners and don't feel pain, and this one is starting to try and munch on 000. Afra manages to cut a deal with her and says, look, if you want to take 000, you can have him when we've done what we need to do. You can take him and then sell him for money if you want. And she's like, okay, that's cool. So she then takes them round to the other side of the city. So the three of them are on the back of Gertl, and Afra is talking to this girl, Vulada, I think is how you pronounce her name. And she asks her, like, were you born down here? And Vulada says, no, we were war refugees. And I'm going to read out exactly what she says because it's just a bit of backstory and it's quite interesting. So this is Vulada speaking. You've been to a frontline planet lately? They've got propaganda all over. Lovely, lawful Milvane. Proof how perfect a world can be when you let the Empire in. When the rebellion came, my folks shipped us here with a big, dumb smile. Only, Dad had a speeder prang on his record, and Mum's papers had a stamp on the wrong page. The family in the next tent at the processing centre didn't like how Gertl smelled, so they snitched. And Afra says, and down you fell. And Vulada says, I hit a net. My folks didn't. And then 000 whispers in Afra's ear, bonding, it's too delicious. So yeah, obviously quite brutal, having a couple of people thrown off rooftops to hopefully hit a net just because a stamp in the wrong place and a speeder prang. Yeah, quite intense. So while they're still travelling, 000 says to Afra that the girl is quite a lot like her, so it's likely that she will betray her because that's exactly what Afra would do. And then while they're riding, they actually get stopped by Tam Posler with a gigantic gun. It seems like this gigantic gun is a little bit like the gun that was in the previous volume of Afra Comics where they like blew a hole in the Kreska jail and managed to climb through. It seems to be that gun. But yeah, Tam Posler is attacking now, imbued with this force fungus and muttering about justice and whatnot. So he shoots this giant gun, it basically blows up and everyone gets flung off Gertl, and Afra and 000 try and run away, and Afra's got a gun. They then get pulled back by the Force, which is obviously Tam Posler in this strange zombie spore state, can use the Force on them, and confirms that they managed to find them using transponder codes. And 000 is like, but how would you have my transponder codes? No one has got them except. And Tam Posler says, you think that flesh is all that the Force can reassemble? And then you see BT-1 beeping in the background, and the Tam Posler spore thing says, BT-1, annihilate them. And that is where that comic ends. So on to issue number 28. It starts off with BT-1 attacking 000 with fire. Now 000 is trying to talk to him while it's happening and going, oh, good job BT-1, I see you're not really trying to hurt me because you know that I'm heatproof and things. And Afra's like diving out the way and just grabbing 000, trying to get him to move out the way as BT-1 starts shooting things that maybe would hurt 000 quite a lot more than fire. While that's happening, Tam Posler approaches and grabs Afra and 000 with the Force, and as they're kind of stuck there and BT is getting closer, Nock appears and spears him. So she does this jumping dive and the spear goes through Tam Posler's corpse into the ground, and he's basically just kind of stuck there and seemingly dead, but obviously he's infected by this hook spore things, so he's not dead. BT then turns his attention to Winloss and Nock, and they use this iron net thing they've got to subdue him. Now that's one of the photos I've taken to put on social media and things, because it's just quite, colour-wise, these issues are amazing. I mean, the art in all of these is really, really cool, and it's definitely well worth a read. And while Winloss and Nock have subdued BT-1, Afra and 000 run away. Back to Evazan and Ponda Baba. Now, Evazan puts a robotic arm on Ponda Baba, which shows that, obviously, in about a year since Obi-Wan sliced it off, he clearly hasn't had some sort of replacement. And so, yeah, he's got now a replacement robotic arm, which is nice and fun. And Evazan puts out a call on a new frequency, basically publicizing the entirety of what Afra and 000 are doing. He's calling for info to the police. He's saying that people can make money out of it, basically trying to get all of Milvane's eyes onto Afra and 000. It shows that Posler awakens with this spear thing through his chest, and Afra and 000 run into Vulada. I do want to apologise, I keep changing the pronunciation of it's either Vulada or Vulada, the V-U-L-A-A-D-A. She's a scrapper girl. I can't figure out how to pronounce it and I'm useless, so sorry about that guys. Vulada or Vulada, same person, scrapper girl. So they find her while Triple Zero is telling Aphra that that loyalty is such a stupid thing among organics and it's just fabrication and there's no way this girl would be loyal to them. And obviously then they find the girl and Aphra gives him the smuggest grin ever. And I want to clarify, I'm scathing over a lot of the dialogue in this. These comics are quite dialogue heavy in the best ways, because some of the dialogue that Triple Zero comes out with is genuinely some of the best Star Wars dialogue I've ever read. Now, it's mainly because it's really funny and sort of tongue-in-cheek stuff, and obviously he's complete psychopath, but he speaks in the same way that C-3PO does, with like etiquette and things. So he uses all these words, and if you read it in C-3PO's voice, it's just amazing. Triple Zero and Aphra are like the number one thing I want to be in live action. I just think a Triple Zero Aphra movie or series could be incredible. But aside from my hopes and dreams, I do recommend you guys check this out, because as I said, I'm scathing over a lot of the dialogue. I'm not really going into the detail, but a lot of these times I'm saying, oh, and then this happens, and then this happens. There's normally like 2 or 3 pages between these events happening where it's just Triple Zero and Aphra talking to each other. It's just excellent. So Aphra and Triple Zero hitch a ride on an Imperial bloat barge along with the Scrapper Girl. Now, it's quite an interesting thing because I haven't seen a bloat barge anywhere else, and they're basically it's like a big, almost like a ship, but it's connected by loads and loads of tubes, and it sucks out important and valuable minerals from the air that the Empire can then harvest and sell and do whatever with. And then all of the sort of smog and gas and horrible stuff that this machine sucks in gets all spouted out in the underworld, so everything's all sort of foggy and whatnot. So is that sort of class system not too dissimilar from Coruscant? But I think Coruscant, there's like some amount of thousands of levels, whereas here it seems like there's more so sort of above world and below. It might be a bit more complicated than that, but that's kind of in layman's terms how you can view it. So they're on this thing, the bloat barge. You can go inside of it and they're just kind of sat in there, and it just slowly makes its way across the city, and it just looks like Gertl is taking a nap as well. And obviously they were shot at by that giant gun thing not too long ago, so I wouldn't be surprised if they were somewhat tired. There's then quite a few pages which are devoted to Aphra and the Scrapper Girl having a conversation, talking about why Aphra doesn't turn Triple Zero off, and then she asks why Aphra betrayed Tolvin, and one quote specifically is that it's better to be alive and guilty than dead and anything. Which is quite a powerful message in a lot of ways, and it's almost that reverse honor thing, isn't it? Because, you know, a lot of people would say they'd rather be honorable but dead than dishonorable but alive and that sort of thing, and this is flipping it, saying no, being alive is more important than basically anything. While they're on this bloat barge, sort of chilling and things, Triple Zero has a little walk, and then he gets confronted by Tam Posler and absolutely loads of police officers and police vehicles. They're then all wondering how are they going to get out of this mess, and Triple Zero decides to take the young Scrapper Girl hostage. Quite soon after that, she shoots Triple Zero through the center of his torso with a gun, and then confesses that she was the one who sold out Aphra and Triple Zero's position. She says that she has to eat, get rich, and save her own skin, and then she pistol whips Aphra in the face and says, "Damn everyone else." And that is where comic number 28 ends. So comic 29 starts on an Imperial PR ship, which is the propaganda flagship, so PR, public relations, and it's showing that the viewing figures of Aphra and Triple Zero is in the billions. There's this woman wearing a hood, but you can see her face fairly clearly, but it looks a little bit sinister, and she's speaking over hologram communication to one of the Imperial officers on the ship, and they're discussing how much the Empire has involvement with Milvane. Now, Milvane accepted the Empire to take control of the planet, but it has to be an invisible presence, so it's more that the Imperials are kind of behind the scenes doing things, and this woman is basically saying, well, this clearly isn't working, because as there's so many people viewing this, what we're worried about is that these two convicts on the run are inspiring people in Milvane to maybe rise up and question authority and order, which is a very important thing. So they decide to listen into the public's opinions using spies and audio scanners and things. While this is happening, Tam and the officers have surrounded Aphra and Triple Zero. Aphra has Triple Zero on her back, his legs are broken, they're still attached vaguely to him, but he clearly can't walk, and they're trying to work out a way to get out of this within seconds, and they decide to call Tam Posler, the vigilante. And they go, well, look, Tam Posler, he got fired. He actually pursued a personal vendetta against orders. Check the warrant number. The officers look it up, they say, yep, he was dishonorably discharged, and then that causes some infighting, so Tam and the officers all start shooting each other, and once again, Triple Zero and Aphra manage to bail. They manage to get out of the way a little bit, and then Aphra says, look, I need to turn you off so that I can fix your legs. Otherwise, the bomb's going to go off. There's no hope of us at all getting out of here. So 000 hesitantly allows her to turn him off to fix the legs and turn him back on again. And when that happens, you can see the public kind of reacting to everything like that, because when he gets turned off, the public who are viewing an Evazan can't see anything while Aphra is doing repair work on him. So 000 wakes up and he says, oh, you appear to have fixed me. And then he walks slowly towards Aphra and she's like, Trip, you know, remember, be careful what you're doing. And then he grabs her, shoots out like his little blade finger things, and then he dives off the edge of a building and latches his hand onto a passing starship. So they're on this ship, they're being pursued and whatnot, and Nock is now pursuing them, jumping from sort of ship to ship with that big spear that she's got. And 000 is trying to get out of the way, and he says, slow down, I was built for agony, not agility. And I like that little bit because that's like a connection to C-3PO, who says, I was programmed for etiquette, not destruction. And I'm pretty certain he does that in episode 2, when I think his head is connected to the droid body in the Geonosis Colosseum and things. But I like the parallels they clearly and cleverly draw between 3PO and 000. I would love for them to meet, although I think 000 would probably try and kill or turn off permanently C-3PO if they did ever interact, but I think it would be hilarious. Especially if they're like tied up or something, if they both got like captured by Jawas or something ridiculous, and they both like powered down, and so they couldn't move, except they were there just talking to each other. I'd love to hear a conversation between C-3PO being, you know, very subservient and serving all the humans, and 000 being the exact opposite. I think, Star Wars, if you're listening, do that, and I'll be happy. Nock, the Trandoshan, she's pursuing them with the big spear thing, and she launches at them, and then she gets hit in the side and collapses. They're a little bit confused where that came from, and they can hear some sort of beeping, and 000 is like, I know that sound. And then he exclaims, oh, BT-1, you must have survived. And so 000 heads straight for BT-1 without thinking about anything else, and Aphra's calling to him saying, look, this might be a trap. Like, she's a Trandoshan. She probably wouldn't have been hit in the side while jumping at us. That seems all very convenient. And she gets to 000, not quite in time, right as he gets to BT-1, and then the platform that they're standing on, lots of poles shoot out the sides, and it folds in on itself, and it becomes a cage, trapping the two of them. He goes back to the Imperial propaganda flagship, and they confirm that public aggression has gone up. They're saying that attacks are going up more and more. It's basically public unrest is being exacerbated by everything that's going on with Aphra and 000. The leader then says to use the railgun, because clearly the invisible touch has failed. And you see it happen. They shoot a railgun from orbit down to this planet, right where all those speeders and things were. It looks a little bit like in episode 2 when they're on Coruscant, and you've got Anakin pursuing Zam Wessel along with Obi-Wan, and there's those bits where, you know, they're jumping from ship to ship and things, and there's just like traffic everywhere. It's a little bit like that, but on a smaller scale, it seems, and there's not as much distance between, you know. Anakin jumps off and free falls for like 30 seconds, and he's still nowhere near the bottom, whereas this looks not quite as high as that. But just imagine someone shooting a railgun from space into that very densely populated area, and it destroys a lot of speeders and things. The ship slash platform thing that Aphra and 000 are in that cage, it starts to fall, and Winloss and Nock eject out of it because it is falling very, very quickly. And the last panels of this comic has got Aphra yelling no as she falls, and you've got 000 who is ripping into her, which is amazing. I'm going to read just a bit of it because it is quite funny. So this is 000 saying to Aphra, indeed, the problem is not that you are immoral, Doctor. The problem, the reason that you are doomed to repeat the same errors until your end, is that you are a disaster. And since you are also a pathetically lonely little ape, you deal with both inadequacies the same way. You drag everyone down with you. And the final panel is just them in the falling ship heading towards the very smoky ground. So on to the penultimate issue of this story, issue number 30. So it shows that Aphra has survived the crash, and she is being asked by Imperials to promote the love of the Empire. They grab 000's head, and he is currently deactivated, and they say that they've put a signal disruptor in there so they can ask her to do these things without any of the public knowing it, and then they can, you know, stop the disruptor, and then the public hear Aphra speaking so well about the Empire. And they're basically saying, look, we'll let you go if you speak really nicely about the Empire, if you say how good it is to follow the law, and you try and basically kick this public unrest down, and we'll see what we can do. Aphra, in response, says, Special Command Override 6 Omega Green to invert polarity and trigger, and before the Imperials know what's happening, this big pulse blows from 000. Aphra awakens and she says that she can't feel her legs, and she has a conversation with Triple Zero. It's been confirmed that she installed a seismic pulse into him, which was going to be used to kill him. So if she hadn't said reverse polarity, then it would have basically made this pulse go inside him, and it would have basically just decimated everything that made him him, which is the Triple Zero personality matrix. And her idea was to use that once the bombs had been deactivated, and she popped that in there when she fixed Triple Zero's legs. Triple Zero commends her for, instead of, you know, saving that for later, using it to actually save the two of them. And it did kill a fair few Imperials, but don't worry, the Imperials that it didn't kill, Triple Zero tortured and killed, because Aphra's actually been unconscious for 3 hours, which means they've only got about 2.5 hours left before the bombs explode. Triple Zero, in some out of character thanks to Aphra for saving his life, shows her footage of Tolvin, who is alive. She is shaking hands with Mon Mothma on a rebel base, and Sarna Staros is nearby. So clearly, Tolvin has now defected to the rebels. Now, this is all stuff that was found in the depths of the Imperial propaganda. I don't know if it's in archives or what, but basically Triple Zero has managed to find out from torturing that Imperial officer and going into the data that they hold and a nearby terminal. He managed to find this information about Tolvin. And the reason it hasn't been reported to the public yet is because if a high up Imperial inspector was defecting, it may give the public the air quotes wrong impression that maybe people are on the wrong side. And Aphra says, well, what's going on with the broadcast and things? And Triple Zero says, oh yes, well, the pulse deactivated the disruptor, so the broadcast is currently on and everyone can see what's going on right now. Aphra is then crying happy tears, which she said is the first time she's ever done that, and she thanks Triple Zero. They then have a back and forth, and it basically gets confirmed that Triple Zero and Aphra together is the closest thing that Aphra has actually had to a relationship, which, obviously, she has this weird on and off thing with Tolvin, but having a sort of a kinship and, you know, those two doing things for each other, as in Aphra and Triple Zero, especially on this wild ride that they've had together, is fairly close to what would be considered friends, which Aphra doesn't really have any of. As a thank you for Triple Zero confirming that Tolvin is alive, Aphra then gives Triple Zero the code to unlock his memories that were encrypted. And I want to say, the artwork for showing what the encrypted memories, sort of how it unfolds in Triple Zero's head, looks amazing. It's one of the coolest pages I've actually seen, and there's just so much to look at. It's not one of the ones I've had a photo of. Sorry, guys, you're all going to have to read the comic to enjoy that part, because I'm not giving you everything. But yeah, so Triple Zero, his memories got unlocked, and he starts remembering his previous murders and all those sort of things. While Zero is basically going through his memories and figuring those things out, Winloss and Nock appear and smack Aphra around the face. She collapses to the floor, they hold her at gunpoint, there's like a back and forth, and eventually Winloss and Nock agree to leave Aphra because she's just pathetic. After watching the fact that her closest thing to a human connection and a real relationship has been with a psychopathic protocol droid, it's so sad that Winloss and Nock believe that just leaving her is probably more torture than actually killing her, so it's just this, it's so pitiful. Aphra is so pathetic, they just don't want to kill her anymore. They've just lost the urge to kill her. And then the last sort of few pages and panels of this comic, as it's a lot of dialogue in this, and there's a lot of really cool things visually. I am just kind of jumping about details and whatnot. Triple Zero recalls his creation, and it turns out that he was actually created in error. His creators were trying to create someone else entirely, and they were going to destroy the Triple Zero personality matrix, but he managed to escape, and he managed to get on a ship and leave and cause terror. He then is shocked by this revelation that he was actually meant to be destroyed instead of being this great invention and this big moment in science, creating in what he believes he's probably the perfect being. And he feels like he's lost meaning of his life, and that he just kind of loses hope and decides to just walk away from Aphra. And as that's happening, she's like chasing after him. Well, chasing. Her legs don't work still after that pulse, so she is crawling after him, saying, if you leave me, if you get too far away, the bombs will go off and we will die. And he just says to Aphra that she made the wrong choice, that she shouldn't have given the memories back. And the comic ends with the bomb beeping very loudly, about to detonate. So we embark on the final issue of this arc, issue number 31. So Triple Zero is walking away from Aphra on the floor. She is then crawling to the corpse of BT-1, and she manages to bring him alive, and Triple Zero hears BT-1's beeps. He stops walking away so they don't explode, and Aphra just lays on the floor, says, thank the stars. 000 then says to BT-1, how do I know that you're not under Aphra's control? And BT-1 stabs Aphra in the leg, which is like, oh, BT, it is you. And Aphra says to him, well, does this mean that you're not going to kill yourself now? And to quote 000, he says, perhaps I was being a trifle rash. A little something you've taught me, Doctor. One doesn't feel one's own pointlessness quite so deeply when one has comrades to share it with. And it does a little montage of like all the people who are watching Milvain. They're all going, oh, how sweet. And you've got Everzahn and Ponda Baba are next to each other. And Ponda puts his hand on Everzahn's shoulder. And Everzahn says, yes, yes, old friend. The deplorable slaughter gadget does make a heartwarming point. It is very disappointing. So Aphra holds onto the back of 000, and 000 is riding BT-1 like almost like a Segway, and it's riding towards the place that they're going, but thinking that they're probably still not going to make it in time. They then run into the little scrapper girl, Vulada, or Vulada. She apologises for betraying them, says the imps haven't actually paid her or anything, as in the Imperials haven't paid her or anything, and she is really sorry. She decides to give them a lift on good old Girtle, and as they're kind of making their way through the city, including while Aphra and 000 are riding BT-1 through the city, in the background you just see a lot of silhouettes of people and a lot of people on their porches sort of waving to Aphra and 000, because obviously they're like basically celebrities now at the moment. And Aphra mentions to the scrapper girl, screw the people in charge. And when that happens, you see a lot of the people watching have like a moment. They kind of see it and have a little ponder. Then with about 10 minutes to spare, Aphra and 000 manage to reach Professor Prexo's place. They get up to the door and there's a sign there saying that he is actually away and he has gone on a trip. Then they turn around and they're surrounded by more Imperials, lots of stormtroopers. And while this is all happening, it is all being narrated by someone that we find out to be Minister Petina Vore. And she was the one who's the shady woman in the holograms and things. She's basically the leader of the propaganda machine at the moment. So 000, Aphra and BT-1 are getting surrounded by stormtroopers. And so Aphra and 000 say to BT-1, annihilate them. And then chaos ensues. BT-1 starts firing out everywhere. And it shows in the middle of the crowd where the stormtroopers are, Tam Posler is actually there. And 000 goes up to Tam Posler and sets him ablaze. As Tam Posler is burning and whatnot, he shoots out a rogue bolt out of the blast that he is holding. The bolt goes straight towards the scrapper girl and it's about to hit her, and then Aphra dives in front of it, saving the life of Vulada. 000 does watch this happen, which means all of Milvain watch it happen, and because of that moment, it causes mass rioting and public solidarity against the Empire. Now, once again, the art in this scene when Aphra does get shot, it is really cool. It's a really nice double page spread, and it's got like a montage thing where you kind of see all the chaos that's happening, all narrated by Minister Vores. And Vores is speaking into this little recording device that she's got in her office. And she mentions that she's going to suppress most of the details that were from Milvain so the rest of the galaxy don't hear about this crazy thing that Aphra and 000 did that caused such public uproar. And because Milvain is specifically used by the Empire as an example of, you know, this is what happens when you let the Empire in, which obviously is what the Scrapper Girl said towards the start when she was talking about her parents and whatnot. So Milvain is like this model Imperial city in the eyes of the Empire. So they don't want everyone to know that they managed to cause mass uproar, rioting and an uprising, all because 000 and Aphra were running amok. Vore says to herself that she's actually only recording all these details in truth because she needs to unburden herself with the truth, because then she can start to suppress the truth and tell her own narrative. But to do that, one has to unburden themselves with the truth. It then shows with there's rioting going on, there's fire everywhere, and Aphra is laying on the floor bleeding out. She's been shot basically in the center of her chest, and she says to 000 she thinks she's dying. 000 says, yeah, it does look like you're dying. You're probably going to bleed out soon. And he says, well, luckily for you, we're going to explode in about 20 seconds. So it doesn't matter anyway. Aphra says to 000, the kid, and get the civilians, get them away from us. And 000 says, oh, I don't think so. We are together, Dr. Aphra. Together at the end. I confess, that makes me rather glad. Let's not ruin it by being selfless, And they start a little countdown to themselves while holding hands, which is quite a nice moment. And then, as it gets down to the what would be the one-timer, it cuts to Windlass and Nock. Windlass says, there we go, the bombs are deactivated. And it shows that they have managed to break into Dr. Everzahn's place and stop the bombs going off. Nock grabs Pondababa's robotic arm, rips it off him, so now he is once again armless, and they confirm the way they managed to find them is using Professor Prexo, the only cyberdoc who's smart enough in Milvane to be able to trace the broadcast signal back to its source. And they managed to get there before Afra could, which is why he wasn't there. And then the final few panels of this comic and this very story arc, you've got 000 standing over Afra and saying, "Goodbye, Dr. Afra, my dear, terrible friend, and good luck." And 000 and BT-1 walk off into the distance, and the last you see of Afra is her laying on the floor with the scrapper girl standing over her while there's chaos all around. And there's a few other panels which are basically just this Minister Vore's woman recording and things, and then she needs to go for this meeting, and it shows that she actually reports directly to Palpatine. And the whole comic finishes with Palpatine saying, "Trust is the preserve of fools and corpses." Obviously, because Palpatine rules with fear and an iron fist, he doesn't trust people do the right job. He instills fear into them that if they don't do the right job, they will be punished. That's quite a good just little panel just to show. And there's quite nice artwork here to see Palpatine here, where he's got lots of his advisors and his Imperial Royal Guards around him and things. And it just shows that Minister Vore, the leader of the Imperial propaganda, reports directly to Palpatine. And that is where that comic ends. Thank you so much for listening, guys. This is a really, really fun comic to revisit and read. As I said, the Afra comics are excellent, and I don't know if they necessarily get better and better, but they are. The first couple of volumes are good, but they're not top tier Afra. It does take a while. I like hearing about Afra and mainly 000. I just think they work so well together and their back and forth is brilliant. Some of the dialogue in these Afra comics is just excellent. They do weird and wonderful things like these crazy force sensitive hook spores. You know, Afra is the playing ground for Star Wars, and I've been reading the second run of Afra comics, which is set after Empire Strikes Back, and it's written by Alyssa Wong. I think it's on the 10th or 12th issue, around that sort of mark. I'm reading those at the moment. Well, obviously I'm not doing them on comics and canon, because that would get very confusing for you guys, but I'm reading them at the same time, and they are really, really cool as well. So when I finish the whole run of Afra, I am excited to get onto the second run of Afra in the future. But what have we got coming up then, guys? So next week you can look forward to the Age of Resistance Heroes episode. So that is going to be the final batch of one-shot stories that I am tackling, and that will finish up the whole Age of Resistance comics that I've been doing, which, if in case you're not aware, a one-shot is just a one-off comic, and the Age of series is basically a one-off comic about an individual character. There's heroes and there's villains. I did the villains ones 3 or 4 weeks ago now, so the heroes ones are next. So it's basically just the heroes of the sequel trilogy. I think there's a story about Poe, Rey, Finn, Rose, Maz Kanata, BB-8, and Admiral Holdo, who is the character played by Laura Dern in The Last Jedi with the purple hair, who does the amazing Holdo maneuver when she, you know, shoots the Radis at light speed into the ships and things, which I'm sure I will get into that and explain a little bit about that when I do tackle that. But that's going to be 4 main stories, 4 main comics, and then there's a special which has got the mini stories, which I think is with BB-8, Maz Kanata, and Admiral Holdo, from what I can remember. So that's going to be next week. The week after that is going to be the next batch of Star Wars comics, just the main run of Star Wars. Then the week after that will be part 2 of my Kanan comics, well, my Kanan comics, part 2 of the Kanan kind of miniseries, but it'll be the next 6 of those. And then after that, it'll mean I've done every miniseries and also every one-shot comic. So then after the Kanan comics, I'll be back doing Afra once again. And then from there, the world is my oyster, as it were. I'll be either tackling the second run of Darth Vader comics, that's looking semi-likely. There's also the High Republic comics are ongoing, there's the Bounty Hunters comics are ongoing, there's loads of ongoing comics and things, and also the War of the Bounty Hunters crossover epic is starting soon, and that's going to be involving the ongoing series of Bounty Hunters, Afra, Darth Vader, main run of Star Wars, as well as the War of the Bounty Hunters miniseries, as well as individual comics themselves, all culminating into a story about Boba Fett trying to get the Carbonite Han Solo to Jabba the Hutt, because obviously the bounty on Han Solo is incredibly high, so all the bounty hunters in the galaxy are trying to get it. So I'm very excited to read that. It's kind of Charles Soule is at the helm, and anyone who listens to my show enough knows that I absolutely love Charles Soule, so it's quite exciting in that regard, and I'll be tackling that at some point. But I think it goes on from like I think it's like June it starts, and it doesn't finish until, I think, October. And there's a lot of issues involved. So we'll see how I sort of tackle those things there. But if you guys have any suggestions on what you want me to tackle next, obviously I've just confirmed what I'm doing for the next month. But obviously once I've finished the Kanan and the Age of comics, I will then have two spaces in my schedule per month to do with what I want. One of them, I'm pretty sure I'm just going to do the 2017 Charles Soule Darth Vader ones, but that other slot, you know, I've got a few options, and I'd love to hear what you guys think about that. Aside from that, there's not really a huge amount else to add, apart from myself, Megan, and Dave did do a special episode on The Bad Batch. We tackled episode 1 and episode 2, spoke about some of the connections to the Clone Wars and Rebels and those sort of things, and that's on the feed of Comics in Motion, so you can check that out. Of the date of releasing this episode, which is released on the 15th of May, it was, I believe, the Sunday before it, so, you know, thereabouts a week before. Aside from that, I've got a few other things in the pipeline as well, so keep your eyes on the feed of Comics in Motion. Make sure you check out my other show, Genuine Chit Chat. I've also got a guest coming on the show who was heavily involved with certain aspects of Return of the Jedi, which I'm very excited to speak with this gentleman about. Once I've got that conversation recorded and in the bag, I will then talk about it a bit more, because I don't want to jinx it or anything like that. And yeah, aside from that, check out my Patreon, guys. You know, patreon.com/genuinechitchat. You can go on there, you get early access to photos of Star Wars comics that I tackle for this show. You also get early access to Genuine Chit Chat stuff, and then also my Afterthoughts show that I do with Megan. I've added a new tier for only £1 a month, which is literally 25p a week. You will get access to the feed that I upload everything on. It's like the bare bones package, in a sense. And you just get access to all the Afterthoughts episodes we do, which is about 2 a week, as well as early access to Genuine Chit Chat. And whenever I release early access to other things as well, they will go on that feed too. So if you want more content from me, and if you want to hear myself and Megan talk about all kinds of different TV shows that we watch and movies and things, and just if you want to hear what it's like me and Megan talking, you know, generally how we are as a couple, then £1 a month. It would mean the absolute world to me if any of you did apply for that. I've already got quite a few patrons, and I appreciate each and every one of those, because I know a lot of them listen to this show. So I love all of you if you're listening. And I just want to say, anyone who's considering going to Patreon and supporting me, £1 a month, it genuinely means so much to me. But if you don't want to contribute financially, still go over to patreon.com/genuinechitchat. There's two episodes on there completely for free, Witcher Series 1 and our views on Star Wars The Phantom Menace. And also, you could also share episodes of this show on social media with your friends, with your family, review on iTunes, talk about it, basically. If you don't want to support financially, which I understand in these times that not often people want to, spread the word of Star Wars Comics and Canon, of Comics in Motion, and of Genuine Chit Chat. Anyway, guys, that is enough from me. Thank you, as always, for listening. You genuinely don't know how much it means to me. I appreciate all of you a huge, huge amount. And as always, guys, may the Force be with you. The intro for Star Wars Comics and Canon is arranged by myself, Mike Burton, and the backing music was made by Eric Matias of soundimage.org.
Comics in Motion is thrilled to be partnering with Humble to become Humble partners. If you follow the link in the show notes, you'll be taken to Humble Bundle, where you can get some access to some amazing stuff. Digital comics, digital books, video games, coding manuals. The amount of stuff that you can get there is obscene. Plus, you get it at a ridiculous discount. So here's what you need to do. Click that link, go to Humble Bundle. Not only are you going to get great stuff at a great deal, but you're also going to support a charity, and you're going to help Comics in Motion keep the lights on. So click the link, go to Humble Bundle, get yourself some amazing stuff. Thanks. Comics in Motion is proud to be sponsored by Renovations Press, home of the world-renowned Tracksuit Man, the story about traveling to which we can all relate, and something we've all missed this last year. Renovations Press continues to make the decades-long quest to bring quality independent comics to the masses, with three comics each year featuring the supergroup / government experiment gone wrong, Section 12. Click the link in the show notes for more information about how you can buy some high-quality independent comics. And stay tuned, because each time a new issue comes out in 2021, Comics in Motion listeners will be eligible to win free copies of Section 12. Click that link, check out Renovations Press, support them on Patreon. You'll be happy you did. What started as just an appearance on Indie Comics Spotlight has turned into an excellent partnership between Comics in Motion and Renovations Press. We look forward to bringing you some amazing content.